Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. This is Lisa Anderson. First up, I need your help. The day has come. This is going to be super fun. We are heading into our 500th episode of The Boundless Show at the end of August. And we want you, for our culture segment for that show, to vote on your favorite culture segment of all time. Of all time. That's like of all 500. The thing is, though, we've helped you out a little bit and we've narrowed it down to the top 20. You need to vote on your top within the 20. And then we're going to circle around in a couple weeks and have you vote between our top three. So the top three finalists. So it should be self-explanatory. You got to go to boundless.org/500, the number 500, boundless.org/500, and vote today for your favorite Boundless culture segment of all time for the show. You can even write it in if yours is not there listed, but we tried to help you out. Okay, boundless.org/500. Do it. Later on in the show, I get to answer our inbox question, which is from a girl who wants to keep up a texting relationship with a guy friend, even though he's moving away and has a girlfriend. What do I have to say about that? And then for our culture segment, we're going to break it down with Michael Daniels. He's a young guy who just got married, and he has some wisdom on what to do, guys, if you want to become Mr. Right. So this is advice from the trenches. Well, we are going to jump into our roundtable, and I'm very privileged to have Brandon, Jenna, and Austin here. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Great to have you. This was kind of a weird roundtable to invite you to because we're going to talk about judging others. So don't feel offended that you were selected.
Right. I'm judging.
Or me.
Everyone in this room right now.
Exactly. Like, why are you here? I don't know. Why are you here? But really, we wanted to talk about it because there was a good article by J.D. Greer. Many of you follow J.D.'s ministry, a devotional, actually. J.D.'s a pastor who wrote an article called 7 Signs That You're Judging Others. And I really like the fact that he opens up by saying, there are just something. Judging is not saying that truth is relative. It's not saying that anything goes. It's not saying that, oh, my religion is just private. That's a big one here in the U.S. Everyone wants to say, oh, I totally, you know, believe. I just keep that to myself. And it's kind of like, okay, what is that about? But so he makes that distinction of it's not really what is black and white and how you draw the line, because scripturally there are a lot of lines drawn and we should all acknowledge that. And that's not really for us to debate. If God said it, we pretty much need to believe it, people. Okay, so let's just get on the same page right there. But I think what prompts a great discussion is after the fact, then, how do we treat people who may disagree or people who may agree with us, but we think, you know, oh, well, they say they agree, but they're not, quote, living up to it, or they're not doing it in the way that I think or whatever. We're making assumptions about them based on their choices or just whatever. In fact, Ross Boone, one of our bloggers, wrote a post a few weeks ago called How Not to Sound Judgy, which I actually, so there's judgmental, judging, and judgy, apparently. Maybe we'll have to Google the differences between those. But I thought he made a really great point of how, you know, sometimes you can state truth, but then how you say it and then you backfill it with love makes a big difference in the way you come across to people, especially those who do not share your faith, because quite frankly, their eyes have not been opened. So I always, you know, oftentimes I like to open up a round table with personal assessments. So I want everyone to jump in and say, when you think of yourself in terms of judging other people, whether by a biblical standard or not, or just your attitude towards folks, would you say that's something you have a proclivity for? Is that easy for you to kind of do and jump the gun and say, oh man, I find myself having an ugly attitude towards someone in that? Or are you more of a, are you more open-handed and grace-filled towards people? What would you say is kind of your natural, you know, bent in that sense?
My natural bent would be probably towards kind of that initial, you know, you even just a gut, you look at someone and you kind of make a call. I think a good example for me is at the gym. You see people and, you know, they either look a certain way or they're, and you just kind of think in your mind, oh, you know, you automatically put them in a category, or you tell yourself, something that's not true about them. So it's not good to do it, but I find that I'll generally, you know, before I know someone, it's happened a few times where I've met someone after the fact and they're completely different, mm-hmm. but you're just basing it on, you know, physical appearance or, you know, how they interacted or how they carried themselves.
Yeah. Don't judge me when I'm on the treadmill eating a Big Mac, Brandon.
Yeah, I mean, it goes past that. The gym was just on the top of my head, but it could be a drive. You know, a lot of the times, even in the car, when you're driving and someone, especially in Colorado, doesn't put their signal on or decides, mm-hmm. I'm going to pull over right in front of you when there's 200 feet of space behind, you make a judgment and you don't know what's going on in their world. I have to tell myself, you know, they could be distracted. Something could be going on in their life that has caused them to not be able to
pay
full transitioning attention. From real world to more of like a media standpoint, it can be on Instagram or on social media nowadays. The way that you perceive somebody's profile could be completely different from the way that they actually act in real life. Mm-hmm. That kind of comes from a person judging themselves, mm-hmm. and an outside way of how they want to be perceived. Mm-hmm. So if I see somebody who's constantly posting pictures of just themselves, I may jump to that conclusion that they're a little bit conceited. Mm-hmm. But it might be because they want a little bit more of like self awareness, or they want that feedback from people in a positive light.
So. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting, because I think there are some people that kind of try, you know, we hear a lot about social media and how people use it to kind of put on this false front of like, mm-hmm. who they are. And I have a friend who's like, she said, Lisa, I can't even fake it. She said, my personality is so boring. I don't even go on social media because it looks like I'm trying too hard. And she's actually like just a great person and super fun. Mm-hmm. But she obviously thinks that whatever, based on what people's expectations of her are, she doesn't meet them. I don't know. Jenna, how about you?
I think we all tend to judge people, especially that maybe look different than us or act different than us, because we don't understand them. It's like, that's not how I would do it. So mm-hmm. I think we have a tendency to think the way I do it is best and the way that they're doing it is obviously wrong. And that's definitely something that I work on and I try not to do, but I still do it. And I think most people do. And I think it's also, we tend to give ourselves the benefit of the doubt, like, oh yeah, I made a mistake, but it's because of this reason. Mm-hmm. And then when we see it in other people, it's like, oh, that's just who they are. That's just how they act. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. So I definitely try to break out of that and have grace and know that I make mistakes. And it's, when I look at my own mistakes, it's very humbling to see. And I'm just like, I'm not any better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. So why would I ever think that way? But
yeah. Do you ever find yourself kind of in a pattern of making assumptions or snap judgments about people, and you find yourself justifying it by saying, well, they should know better, or this is, you know, they've failed in this like multiple times and they've been told that, and why can't they just get their act together? I mean, I think I'm much more prone to do that, I think, with my fellow Christians, because I'm just like, seriously, you know, we're all supposed to be witnesses and whatever. And then I'm being a super jerk about it. And I'm being like the least witnessy of any person. I'm just like clearly not, you know, the one in the ring on that front. But I think that becomes easy to do.
It for sure. I think the sin that you see in other people, you know, we're very quick to say, well, I don't do that, you know, so I'm, you know, I must not be as bad as them. But then there's sin in your life. Then I think the article kind of references that we kind of dismiss our own sin and focus on the flaw or the problem with the other person, when really, as we know, it's all equal in God's eyes. And while we think that because we don't do X, that makes us better, we have stuff in our life too that is causing us to fall short.
Well, and it's almost like we don't even admit our own sin, because we just like write it off like, mm-hmm. oh, no, that's just my personality, or that's just, we have all our excuses for our own stuff. And I think that's why I'm such a big fan of accountable community, because you really sometimes do need people to hold up that mirror and be like, no, actually, let me give you a little heads up.
We live in a culture that wants feedback, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. when you actually get it and it's more so of a critical feedback, you don't like to hear it. And that's something that I think that we need to work on individually, so that we're able to actually, number one, give the feedback, but receive feedback in a better light. Mm-hmm. Because if you can receive feedback and constructively work on that portion of your life that needs that reflective mirror, mm-hmm. as you're saying, then you can actually start to move forward and better your life and try to help others in that same exact way.
Yeah. This is so true, and I want to kind of land here for just a second, because this is something that I feel like we in the church have, to our own peril, taken on or adopted from the attitudes of the world. The sense of, like, I have a number of non-Christian friends who anytime I brought up just something that's been like a struggle in my life or a difficult person or just something that probably, I mean, there's two sides to the story and I'm not the only one in the right. But the first thing my non-Christian friends do is say, oh, no, you just need to be done. You don't need that negative energy in your life, or you don't need that negative, you know, no one needs this negativity, or we should just be positive, or we should just be, which isn't necessarily, sometimes we do need negative. And I think, have you seen that in your circles of friends? I feel like that started to infiltrate the church in the sense of, let's all just build one another up, which is a very good thing to be doing, and obviously very scriptural, but almost to the, let's build someone up and not necessarily point out the sin or point out the wrong or even just small little corrective things that should be happening. Yeah. I don't know. Has that been anyone's experience?
Absolutely. You don't want to talk about the things that are going wrong in your life, and you almost want to just drop them where they are. So a lot of people only focus on, say, three good things that are happening, but won't focus on the two bad things that they've been doing for a while, but they may have stopped. And it still is impacting them over time, because it can be a mental thing, it can be a physical thing that they need to constructively work on, but nobody is really pushing them to do so.
Yeah, and there is kind of that push, like, you want to be encouraging, but honestly, some of the most encouraging conversations I've had with people are, like, with my roommates and things like that, where they're pointing out, like, hey, this isn't exactly great, and this isn't healthy, and you don't need to be worrying about that, and you need to trust God in this area, or you have a lot of pride in this area. And so, like, yeah, in that instant, it doesn't feel encouraging, and it doesn't feel great, but having that feedback and having those people in my life that say, hey, these are areas that you need to work on so that you can be a better witness and that you can serve God better, that's really important to me, and that's really valuable to me.
That's good.
Yeah, and the culture has embraced relativity to the degree that I think it's seeping into the church as well. And that, as long as it, you know, there's just, if it feels good, you know, then it's okay. And there's accountability. Jesus was, he held people accountable. He did it in love, but he wasn't afraid to communicate, you know, what was right and what was wrong. And especially in the church, you know, you see the focus being put on, you know, I don't want someone to feel bad about, you know, what they do, or I'm just not going to say. And it happened in my life too. I had a friend that I should have spoken truth into that I didn't. And, you know, I just kind of chalked it up to, well, you know, I don't want to hurt his feelings, or, you know, maybe it's not. It's just, you get so many messages from society saying that it's okay to act that way, and you shouldn't have to be accountable for it. It's what makes you feel good. And so that takes precedent over, you know, what that real truth is. And it's a slippery slope.
Yeah. And I think it's one of those, one of the areas I see where it's very easy to do that, even as believers, is where we feel there's some kind of cause of justice or someone's been wronged. Just on a smaller scale, I had a good friend who got broken up with recently. So the guy kind of dumped her. And quite frankly, he didn't kind of dump her. He actually dumped her and did it in a, quite honestly, lame and dishonoring way. So it was just abrupt. It was lame. And so immediately, like, three of us or four of us close friends were like, that was so terrible, and he's so lame, and we're trying to make her feel good and feel validated and feel justified in her sorrow and her hurt. And then one of my friends, and, you know, I'm sorry to say it was one of my other friends, and it wasn't me, I should have jumped in here too, but one of my friends just said, you know, but we do need to be careful not to malign him in the sense that he is still a brother in Christ. And, you know, we don't know what kind of brokenness he has and where he's coming from and what place that is. And even though we can acknowledge what he did was wrong and it was done poorly and all that, you know, maybe God will bring someone in his life that'll help, you know, him grow in that area and stuff. And I just thought that was really good to kind of point us back to, we still can value the person and honor the person in the midst of that and learn from it ourselves, you know, to ratchet that back. Because we so wanted to jump on that bandwagon and just be, you know, defending our friend because she's so great. And why was he so mean to her? And which are all good things. We want to help out our friends. Yeah. But at the same time, we can do that without disparaging others. Mm. One thing in J.D. Greer's article that I want to pull out is he makes the point of refusing to forgive. And then he says, or when you forgive, you refuse to forget. And I don't think there's any way we can always forget everything that's been done to us. I mean, that's a little bit unrealistic. But this idea of I've been here before where it's like, okay, well, I just chose to forgive them. And I know that, you know, by not forgiving, it's hurting me more than it's hurting them. And we hear all these things that are, you know, totally true and stuff. They're hard to apply. But then we kind of want to hold on to it just a little bit, you know, kind of that idea of, I think that's where he's going when he says forgetting. We're going to, quote, forgive them, but we also want them to kind of pay for what they did. We want to make sure they know they were wrong and make sure that they know that they were a loser or know, you know, and if they seem to forget that and they get too grace filled, oh, no, we better circle back and make sure that their justice is meted out as well. How would you guys say that can reflect being judging of a person in that sense?
I think it, again, just goes back to we're forgetting how much God has forgiven us and how much grace he has and how much patience he has, even when we turn back to the same things over and over again. And so, because I think that if we have that fully in view, it's not really possible to forgive and keep holding that over someone's head. Because God doesn't do that to us. He doesn't keep a record of wrongs. He doesn't continually be like, oh, you messed up in that area last time. If you do that again, like, I'm not going to forgive you. That's not how he works, and that's not how we should work as his followers.
Mm-hmm. Good point. I was going to jump in here too. A couple other points I want to highlight here is the whole idea of, I started out by saying how it was highlighted in the article that, you know, truth is truth and we have to take a stand for truth and be honest about that and not settle for moral compromise in any sense. But a lot of times we can look at others, and a couple of the final points in the articles talk about deeming someone as hopeless. So we kind of tend to not think the best of them in the sense of, oh, well, they're a lost cause or they'll never believe me. And some of it's out of our own insecurity. So it says here, you know, one sign that you could be judging others is you refuse to correct someone's position. And that could be either because you're judging them, you're fearful of how they're going to treat you. So you don't trust God with them. You don't trust their response. Or you're just fearful or very dubious that they will be able to change and have a heart change. You think they're so far gone and that they are, as the final point says here, a hopeless case. I mean, I know I've been there. Has anyone else been there in the sense of just feeling like it's time to write someone off? And how do you distinguish between writing someone off like they're hopeless and I don't want anything to do with them and just setting good boundaries for a person that truly, like, if there are times when in relationships we have to have just good boundaries. You know, some people are toxic and some people are just bad influences, but how can we walk that fine line, would you say?
I think it comes back to the feedback due to the fact that you can go into a relationship and you might not have set those boundaries to begin with. And if you can kind of work those things out in the beginning, maybe you fall away from them at some point in that relationship. But if we're truly talking about writing somebody off in a relationship as hopeless, then you might be able to set an example. And then it's all in how you then position your point of view or how you would correct the behavior. You don't want it to be something of you're imposing all of your thoughts on them, but maybe you can lead by an example. And they come back from that hopeless spot and maybe they ask a question to you. And it is very important of how you answer that question or continue to have your actions be your example. Mm-hmm. And I think if you think that somebody is hopeless, that there are a lot of people that God or Jesus, when he was here on earth, actually saw as hopeless, but saw hope in them. And I should say that the public thought was hopeless, but Jesus saw hope in them and actually restored them. So he was able to take fishermen and make fisher of men for a couple of his disciples And he was actually able to lead by example. And then when they were questioning in their faith, he was able to help them along and say the right things and then continue the right actions to just kind of push them forward even further.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I think that's also a good illustration of how Jesus did it so well in letting kind of questions and his ability to listen and use illustrations and stuff to teach rather than what I do. This is clearly why I'm not Jesus. My tendency is to listen to someone and they get about two sentences in and then I'm like, here's what you need to do. Okay. I just want to fix everyone. I think I have the answers for everyone, like with their situation, except for myself. Myself, I don't know what to do. I'm just a mess, whatever. But everyone else, I seem to have all the answers, you know, and it's so funny how all of a sudden we're experts on how everyone else should be living and believing and behaving and stuff. But when it comes to ourselves, it's so much easier to apply biblical truth and sound judgment, which, I mean, any to that end, as we kind of wrap here, what would you say would be some good advice for people on how to really love people where they are and be, you know, kind of be that friend that someone needs to show, to walk that line, to be bold with the truth and with what the Bible says, but to also show that you're going to stick by someone and love them through their own doubts and questions.
I think honestly, yeah, truth is really important and you need to be upfront with them, especially initially. But after they know where you stand and how you feel about an issue, I think maybe just setting that aside a little bit and being like, I'm here to walk through this with you. And I understand that you struggle with this and that I have areas that I struggle with, and I'm not going to keep beating you over the head with that, but I'm here for you and you know where I stand.
Yeah, and kind of setting those, again, those boundaries, making sure you set those early on, especially if the friend or the relationship that you're in, you know, you can, I still think, you know, you can communicate what you believe, but I think through actions, it's, you know, that really shows the person that it's true. And so, you know, not drawing your line or saying, you know, I'm not gonna do this. I'm gonna be your friend. I want to have a relationship with you. But here are some of the areas that, you know, where I stand, and I'm just not gonna compromise on. I think is very important, because it's, again, we can talk and we can communicate and give lip service all day, but if you don't show it in your actions, you know, it doesn't mean anything. So I think that's important. And then just to have grace, and, you know, again, to meet that person where they're at, and to not to see them through a circumstance or a situation, but to see them as a child of God as well. And to know that, you know, depending on the situation, that we are all sinners, we all fall short. And it doesn't mean that they're any better than you, or you're any better than them because of what you've done or your past. So.
Yeah. Well, good thoughts, you guys. Yeah, I know for me, I think I just need to do more listening and more. Something else I found to be really effective is, as someone's quote unquote venting or sharing their opinion or whatever, sometimes I just say, you know what, let's just stop and pray about it. Because I think it's so easy to get on some trail of whether it's gossip or venting or crazy or feeling justified in fixing like I do. But sometimes we just need to stop and pray and be a listening ear to a person and speak scriptural truth rather than what we think is our solution of truth. And that can be a good place to start. So thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.